Welcome back to the Send 938 Missions Podcast, a ministry of Baptist Wood Missions designed to encourage, equip, and inspire the next generation of missionary servants and the churches who will send them. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, Administrator for North American, Asian, and South Pacific Ministries here with Baptist Wood Missions. And I'm so grateful that you found the podcast today for part two of a two-part series from our revitalization seminar we'll be hosting this summer, June 4th, 5th, and 6th. We'd love to see you there for that. Registration info is in the show notes for today's episode, or you can send us a note at send938@bmm.org, and I'll make sure to get you all the relevant information. But this is part two of one of the hours of instruction that I offer during our seminar on becoming a member of your community. It's a challenge for pastors and leadership in the church to be setting the tone and example for personal evangelism as an essential means of renewing life in the local church. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, I'm going to permit you to pause this one right now. Go back and listen and catch up, because if you haven't listened last week's, you're going to be diving into the very middle of an hour-long instruction on this topic. So I trust that you will enjoy and be encouraged and blessed by this week's episode of the Send 938 Missions Podcast. All right, second thing we need to do is to not just be visible, but get to know your community. Knowing the culture and living the culture are two very different things. Without any sense of interest in condemning former coworkers, but how many of you have known families who have come to a place, have arrived, they have not learned the culture, maybe they didn't learn the language, and you recognize there's a direct connection between that and the longevity of their ministry? It's really, really essential that we learn the culture that we're living in. To minister effectively to a deeply ingrained culture requires an effort to understand and be comfortable with the culture that God has called us to. And again, overseas missionaries who spend a great deal of time and energy getting to know the language and the culture of the land in which God has called them. And we must understand what is easily recognized globally is applicable here nationally. Culture in America varies widely. The Northern Ohio community that I was raised here, and I'm living in the same zip code that I was raised in. I was raised right here, part of the time in this church, in this auditorium. Southeast Colorado was very different. So within a week or two, the first thing I did was I got rid of all of my casual shoes, my tennis shoes, whatever, and I went and bought a pair of cowboy boots. Because I realized there were a bunch of extroverts in town. Of course, you know the difference between an extrovert and an introvert, don't you? Fowler was filled with extroverts. And the difference between an introvert and an extrovert is an introvert stares at their shoes and an extrovert stares at yours. Everywhere I went, people were like, oh, what's this guy about? What's he wearing on his feet? So again, a ranching and agricultural community, I just said, I'm going to have to dress differently than I've ever dressed before in order to not look like I don't belong here, even though I don't belong here. there is a distinct difference between knowing the culture and living the culture. We can be academically, theoretically informed and not be comfortable operating in the culture that we're informed about. It is incumbent upon someone who is looking to become all things to all people so that they might save some. It is incumbent upon us to be not only willing but aggressive about the effort to learn to live the culture that we're living in. And that does not mean that we do all of the reprobate things that are sometimes employed in that culture, but it does mean that we learn to eat like them, we learn to live like them, we learn to dress like them, we learn to talk like them. You know, we learned pretty quickly that when we told people that we were from Colorado, they looked at us like, no, you're not. Because you don't pronounce it Colorado. You pronounce it Colorado. Okay. Karaoke is after lunch, Brian. Additionally, again, to some degree, recognizing and preaching to the choir here, building relationships is an essential part of becoming a ministerial chameleon.
Building relationships is essential for personal evangelism and discipleship, isn't it? You are not going to have an efficacy in ministry where you consistently see people won to Christ and discipled into maturity if all you're doing is handing out tracts or standing on street corners. There is a relational dynamic that must exist in faithful evangelistic and discipleship ministry. And so that requires a willingness to build relationships. And let me just explain to you, if you haven't heard this or aren't able to articulate this yourself, maybe you already understand this, that it is critical that we have a relationship with someone before we lead them to Christ if we want to have an ongoing relationship of discipleship. Because the person that doesn't know us but hears the gospel message from us and maybe responds to that gospel message is going to be someone who we can praise God has responded with an affirmation of faith, but they may not have any interest in continuing a relationship with us whereby we might disciple them in their newfound faith in Christ. The relationship on the front end is critical to the discipleship on the back end. And so it should never be our interest to guard our testimony so carefully that we refuse to build relationships with an unredeemed world. When we do that, we are not practicing biblical separatism, we're practicing isolationism. And so we are building relationships with a redemptive interest. So, as I said, caution has to be exercised here for maintaining testimony, but if we want to continue effectively ministering, we need to think of this in terms of what is obvious, but again, may not be articulated clearly in our own thinking or by anyone else around us. And that is that there is nothing that invigorates the life of a local church body like the regular flow of new believers through the door. You have probably all been witness to this. There is nothing that invigorates the local church like a steady flow of baby believers who don't know how to act in church. And praise God they don't, right? We had a fellow in our church named Gary. He's still there. Gary came to us after this really a weird story. He was renting a home from an elderly lady in our church. He was living with the lady that we presumed to be his wife. She presumed to be his wife when she rented them the house because they referred to each other as husband and wife. Fact is that they had been married previously. They were divorced and then got back together but never remarried. So they'd been living together as divorcees and as if they were a married couple now for like 6 or 7 years. And she, the lady in our church renting them the home, learns about this, and she immediately thinks, "What have I done? You should be married. You should definitely get married. You need to be married now." She was really aggressive about this "you need to be married" thing, which, good for her. And she said, "I think my pastor would be willing to do your wedding if you want him to." "Well, we don't know your pastor." "Well, come to church with me. Come to church with me." So months went by, and they finally came to church one Sunday. Both of them left saying, this is really great. This is what we really needed. They got the good message preacher kind of thing at the door, Of course, where we were, I got every once in a while we'd get a "appreciate what you said there, Padre," that kind of thing. Yeah. But Gary left, and about a week later he came back, and another 2 weeks later he came back without his wife. She's wife now. So several months more of this regular visitation goes by, and he says to me, "Polly said that you'd be willing to do our wedding, but I don't think after talking with you that you probably would do our wedding." I said, "Why wouldn't I do your wedding?" He said, "Well, we're divorced." I said, "Yeah, but you're divorced from each other, right?" "Yeah." "Okay. Should you be married?" "Yeah, we should probably be married. Should never got divorced." I said, "I think I'm okay with doing this wedding." So in their backyard, I did their wedding one day, and I welcomed everyone who was there to round two, and we did the wedding, and they were saved shortly thereafter, maybe 4 or 5 months thereafter, again doing a Bible study, this time with Polly, who owned the house they lived in. She was using the exchange Bible study that we used in our church. And she did this Bible study with him. Both of them made a profession of faith. Gary came from a background of substance abuse and addiction and theft and crime. He was actually injured in a retaliatory home invasion. So he had invaded someone's home in a, like, blew through the doors with two other guys, put everybody on the floor, stole what they wanted while somebody was watching them with a baseball bat, and then they left and they knew who it was, so they came back and beat him up, and he had a traumatic head injury from that. And he was just loud and often inconsiderate, and he would walk into church on Sunday mornings, get to the back of the auditorium and just go, "Good morning, church family!" Which, if you're wondering, was not the normal greeting for our church. But he had grown to love our church and what he was experiencing there and what he was learning there. And after a few weeks and dealing with one or two people who wanted to tell me, "I need to tell Gary to be quiet," the response from the church shifted to, "Good morning, Gary," whatever they were doing. Gary's leading youth, some of the youth ministry at our church now. But relationships have to be built with an unredeemed world if we're going to reach the unredeemed. And you know, as you may be familiar with the saying, if you're going to get down in the weeds, you're probably going to get messy sometimes. But that's where ministry is conducted. And so it's really essential that we consider the necessary role of building relationships with unredeemed people, not with an interest in growing our friend base, not with an interest in impressing other people with how relational we are, but with a singular interest that there would be those with whom we would build a genuine relationship of trust so that we might have that privilege of addressing their greatest need. This demands that we walk into those relationship building moments knowing what we're doing. Because if we get weeks or months into a relationship with somebody and then we finally reveal to them who we really are, you know, "I'm a missionary, I'm a pastor, I grew up in a church, I'm a believer," whatever, however it is we talk to them about our faith, what we don't want to do is arrive at a place where they're totally surprised and put off by the fact that, "Oh no, I've made friends with a Baptist preacher. What is my mother going to think?" You know. So we walk into that with eyes wide open, understanding what we're doing. And from day one, we are looking to build relationships. And we're going to get to this before we're done, as time allows, and I think it will. But there is a necessary awareness that operating this way is really riding the razor's edge of disingenuousness. Because what we don't ever want to have happen is somebody find out that the only reason that they're my friend is because they're trying to make me a Christian. It all becomes very disingenuous at that point. And so, lastly here, we need to step outside of our comfort zones. Ministry is difficult. And difficulty in ministry to believers lends itself to those involved in ministry seeking comfort in areas of personal time and relationships. And so in discussing spiritual gifts with new believers in our church, and new members, I would always encourage them to try something that would be outside of their comfort zone, what they would normally like to do. And if after experiencing it, they still said, "Man, that just turns my stomach to think about being in a room full of 4-year-olds. You know, this is the thing about spiritual gifts. God's not going to give you a gift to be used for the edification of the body if you hate it every time you engage in it. But if you do something you've never done before and learn that you love it, then you may have discovered what God designed you to do in that local body. And so trying new things is essential because we may be surprised. We likely will be surprised at the kind of joy that it brings to serve people outside of our comfort zone. And for the pastor, for the missionary, for the minister of any kind, it's essential that he go outside of what may have become familiar and routine. For me, that experience was my first spring in Fowler when I was asked to go and visit with a friend I'd made, go and visit their ranch during their calf branding. So this is Old West style stuff here. There were no mechanical chutes. There were no arenas. There were no established pens. There was temporary holdings set up for cattle that were gathered out of 6, 7, and 10,000 acre pastures. They were brought to a corner of the pasture. They were closed in a temporary makeshift pen. Fires were lit. Branding irons were heated. All of the vaccinations and medications were laid out. The irons to disbud them, to burn the horns off before they could grow out, were heated up. The knives were sharpened for castration. The ear tags, everything that needed to be done was about to be done. And we would take, and I did this for about 7 years until my back really got a hold of me and I couldn't do it anymore. But we would take 150 to 300 calves at a time. Several hours of this. And you have two or three cowboys on horseback. They'd walk into the end of the arena where the calves were all settling, because these calves are 200 to 300 pound calves by this point. They'd just ride their horse slowly in there. They'd drop a rope around the back leg of one. They'd turn around, dallied around the horn on their saddle, and they'd ride back to the fire where we were waiting. And as they drag that calf through the dirt, we would grab hold of it. If it wasn't already on the ground, we'd flip it onto the ground, bulldog it to the ground, sit down with it. Somebody held a front leg up in the air. Another guy held the back leg and put a foot against its hip, laying on the ground like this. And in came the guy with the knife and another guy with a hot iron and somebody with the needle and somebody else with the disbudding iron. And the worst 30 seconds of that calf's life would ensue. And as soon as all of that was done, the guy on the front would stand up. The guy on the back would take his foot and push the calf away from him. And the calf would stand up and run back into the circle with his ear tag on, so the cowboys knew, I don't need to drag that one again. And we did that over and over and over. It was a bloody, sweaty, stinky mess. And it became my absolute favorite thing to do. Absolute favorite thing to do. But if you had told me 6 months before I went and did that, that this was something I was going to be participating in, I would have probably like, you're saying what now? We need to be willing to step out of our comfort zone. And after a couple of years of doing this, I tell you this story because I can tell you for sure there is at least one family in our church that was a direct connection from those cowboys. We lived in an area where there were guys who had a truck and a single axle horse trailer and a horse and all the tack, and that was their means of employment. They would day wage work for ranches and feedlots. We had 6 feedlots in our area that housed, depending on the time of the year, anywhere from 75 to 300,000 cattle in those feedlots. One of the largest cattle producers in the country owned a 180,000 acre ranch just south of our town. His feedlot on his ranch held 30,000 cattle all year round. There were guys that made a living doing this, and they were not the guys that were looking for a church on Sunday morning. And I wasn't a cowboy. And I didn't pretend to be a cowboy. I didn't dress up like the cast of City Slickers and go out there and pretend like I knew what I was doing. I just went out there and said, somebody tell me what to do. I'm big enough and strong enough that I can probably manage. And they did. And we built relationships. And it was way outside of my comfort zone. But it was a real blessing to have those friends, to make those connections, and to grow our church in part through things like this. So again, chameleon-like ministry doesn't require you to sacrifice your identity, but it does require you to think humbly about who you really are and the fact that your interests and your idea of who you are is not the most important thing. Chameleon-like ministry also demands, as I just said, humility. It demands an understanding that you're riding the razor's edge next to disingenuousness. So how do we become the student of our culture that would allow us to become this chameleon-like minister? I'll throw all of these up here at the same time, I think, and I'll just work through them. Oop, there we go. Yep, too far. Definitely too far. There we go. So good students in any context are good listeners. You know, what does a good missionary do when they first arrive on the field? They settle in and start telling their coworkers how they're going to do everything, right? They look at the nationals and they say, you know, you don't know this, but I'm an American, and we kind of have it all figured out, so... Pretty kind of a big deal. Good students are not talkers. Good students are listeners. And to be a good student, you need to be a listener to those around you. Good students evaluate what they see and hear, everything that you see and hear. You don't just experience it and walk away with a good story. You think to yourself, how does this affect my ministry? Is there an avenue here for me to conduct ministry? Is there someone that I met today through that experience that I want to pursue for a relationship with them that would lead them prayerfully to Christ? Who am I going to start praying for as a result of this? We evaluate what we see and hear. And I've said it often enough, you know what I'm about to say. I don't need to tell you this, but when you start praying for people who are without Christ, even as someone who has experienced over and over and over again the moment of recognition that God was opening the door that I was asking him to open, it astounds me how frequently he opens the door when we just start praying for open doors. I had a running list of people in our church that had visited but weren't attending, weren't engaged, weren't connected in any way, and probably were without Christ. And when we learned that we were headed to Ohio, God was working in ways that we couldn't deny, and we were moving to Ohio, and I knew I had about 10 weeks left before we left Fowler. I had a list of 5 people on my list that I had been praying for about their salvation. A guy I regularly bought hay from, 2 guys that worked in the local tire shop in town, a guy that was the vice president of the bank in town, I can't remember the 5th one right now, but I will later, I'm sure. I had this list, and I had been praying for them, and I thought to myself, I'm just going to commit to more earnest prayer, and I'm going to take part of every day between now and when we leave to find one of these guys at their home or their shop or their farm and just visit with them. Just look for the open doors that God's going to give me. And in those 10 weeks, 2 of those people came to faith in Christ. I'd had relationships. I felt horrible about this because I'd had a relationship with them for 8-9 years, some of them. And in those 8-9 years, I would have said, yes, I'm trying to witness to Joey. I'm trying to witness to Jacob. I'm looking for ways to witness to Keith. But in those last 10 weeks, I got serious about it. And the Lord allowed the fruit to be reaped there. We have to think carefully about what we're seeing and hearing and how we can put that knowledge to good use. Another thing that good students do is they help others understand. A good student of culture is going to help others understand. That's why our field team dynamics are set up the way they are so frequently, that the senior veteran missionaries are going to look at the younger missionaries, the new guys on the field, and say, here's what we've come to know. We want you to understand how this is going to work, what this is going to look like, what you need to think about, how you're going to navigate this part of your life, what this is going to look like when this whatever renewal of something comes up every year, you know, all those things. We help others understand. Well, as a pastor, as a missionary church planter, as someone who is discipling others, you need to be thinking about being a good student by way of teaching others what you've come to see and know and understand. The other thing is good students never stop learning. They eagerly seek new avenues for understanding. A good student of culture is never going to arrive at a place where they say, I really know everything there is to know here. And that means I'm fully fit to reach every person here. A good student is going to recognize that there are still things to be learned and will seek opportunity to learn them. And when they learn them, they will employ that knowledge and teach others what they've come to understand. This is a cyclical relationship of students and learners. So becoming a student of your culture is imperative.
I trust that you've been encouraged and blessed by this episode of the Send 938 podcast. And of course, if that's you, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us a note at send938@bmm.org with any comments or questions on this or any other episode of the podcast. Make sure, please, if you aren't already, to subscribe, share, and leave us a 5-star rating review to help others find this, the Send 938 Missions podcast. And as always, we'll meet you back here next Wednesday.